What's going on, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. It's Louis DiBiase joining you on this Thursday edition of the show. We're bringing back Stock Up, Stock Down post combine edition. This was a weekly segment on the show during the season, so if you're a regular listener, you are very familiar with our Stock Up, Stock Down segment. I am joined by my co-host Gino Camilleri. Got a lot of stuff to get into. If you missed any of our recent podcasts, you can always check them out on LockedOnEagles.com or on any podcast platform. Just tell Alexa, just tell Siri to play the Locked On Eagles podcast, and we will be up and available on wherever you listen to podcasts. Had some great episodes recently this past week. I did my off-season simulation yesterday where I took over for Howie Roseman, simulated free agency, simulated the mock draft or the 2019 NFL draft through a mock draft on the Draft Network's mock draft simulator, made some more in-house decisions, and then Gino on Tuesday talked to Andrew DiCiccio of the Eagles Wire, getting into some combine-related topics, Eagles draft questions. So we've had some awesome episodes the past couple weeks and past couple days, so I do recommend you guys check out those episodes. Gino, I just want to get into, before we go through our Stock Up, Stock Down post-combine edition, get into some of the winners and losers of that free agency coming up, the NFC East. I feel like they're going to be some of the losers in this episode. But the combine, real quick, I know you talked with Andrew on Tuesday about it, but I think you would agree that, you know, while I think it can help or hurt a lot of prospects, even some of the prospects that really struggled in Indianapolis, like, this isn't something that you really got to put all your chips into when it comes to the combine. Like, there's so much else that has to do with the draft, the evaluation process, that, I don't know, do you think it's more so that, how much stock do you think teams and front offices actually put into the combine?
I think there's an element to it that they have to consider, and one of the things with the combine that you have to look at is you can't just look at it as a whole. You have to look at the player as a whole, and the combine you can't just look at as the one element of the player. You look at a player, you look at a Paris Campbell. People are mocking him in the first round now. I saw Daniel Jeremiah of NFL Network mocked him in the first round. When you go look on tape, he's not a first-round prospect. Like, you have to put some stock into it. But what the combine can do is either reassure some issues that you think a player may have had, or take some doubts out of your mind. You look at somebody like Montez Sweat. Yes, he ran the fastest 40 out of any defensive lineman, but you go look at the agilities that they ran. His agility, like, the three cone numbers were good, but like the on-field testing, you could still see the one thing on tape that was an issue, and that was his tightness, his ability not to bend as well. And you could see that. It's like, oh, wow, he runs this great 40 time, but in the drills that actually matter, in the drills that reassure the issues that you saw on tape, that's where you can get the full scope of who the player is. And that's how you have to look at it. You just have to say, okay, did the player test out? Were they not as athletic on tape as you would like them to be? Can the combine solidify that? Look at Juan Thornhill, for example, the safety out of Virginia. He was one guy that he's mocked in most second rounds. He was either a late second round guy, early third round guy. You knew he was going to be athletic solely off of his tape. He can get up in the air. He's a ball hawk. He's around the ball, runs really well. He goes out and jumps through the freaking moon. So, like, that just, all in all, it puts it all together for the scope of the picture is. I wouldn't put overly too much stock into the straight line testing, especially for like defensive linemen or offensive linemen and stuff like that. You have to look at the individualized drills, how they fit the niche of that player. And overall, you can't just look at the box score. You can't just look at the combine. You can't just look at the tape. You have to use all those elements and combine a theory and a hypothesis around a player and put that into your evaluation. So the combine definitely does help, but you can't put too much stock into it.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think that's the way most people even warn fans going into it, because it is such a highly publicized event now, which it never really was in the past. But you see, I mean, me, I can't tell you, Gino, how many hours I spent watching the combine this past weekend. I mean, it's really an event now that people gravitate towards because people are so into the NFL offseason as basically another regular season. Even though there's not football being played, there's just such an excitement level to it that things like the combine we are dying for in February. And while I think you're right, I think, sadly, a lot of teams don't take that advice because you do see Daniel Jeremiah. He's in touch with a lot of NFL front offices, specifically Philadelphia, where he used to work. And he was a scout with the Eagles, I believe, and worked with the front office in the mid-2000s with Andy Reid and Howie Roseman. And a guy like him knows suddenly, I mean, he's not going to just throw Paris Campbell in the first round when me and you have been seeing him available in mock drafts in the fourth round without knowing that his stock definitely is rising because of that 40-yard dash. We've seen it with John Ross as the example I brought up the past couple episodes of being a ninth overall pick. And even Mecole Hardman, your guy from Georgia, I'm seeing him mocked now in like the end of the second round, like early third, because of how much people love speed. So while you're right, I do still kind of think, though, teams maybe put more stock into it than they should.
I agree 100%. And this is the thing that you have to look at, and this is the thing that separates good front offices from bad front offices. You look at the combine, and you look at some freaks that have, like, tested well overall, and you look at John Ross. He's a prime example. I'm sure that teams say, okay, John Ross ran well. Do we go and see that on tape? Other teams that put a lot of stock into the combine, really when you shouldn't, like the Cincinnati Bengals, go out and make massive mistakes because of that. You look at Jamarcus Russell, the reason the Raiders drafted him is because you always hear the fabled story of how he could throw a ball 70 yards off of his knees. And some teams fall in love with that. And what it comes down to is what the scouts value. Dan Hatman, when I was in my time with the Scouting Academy, was telling me that when he said when he was with the Giants, they wouldn't even look at a linebacker unless he was over 6'2", 235 pounds. So teams put it depends what the team is. They all have their individualized skill sets that they would like, individualized player profile that they would like. And if a team was going into the combine saying, if we could get a guy who runs over under a 4.3 and Paris Campbell goes out and does it, yeah, maybe they may want to draft him higher than most teams would. But the thing is, like I say time and time again, you can't just be a box score scout. You can't just be a combine scout. Like, if you just turned on the tape this weekend and that was the first exposure you had to any of these players in the draft was the combine, you're going to look at Paris Campbell and you're going to look at Montez Sweat and saying, these guys should be first and second overall for how fast they ran, you know? Like, in DK Metcalf, throw him in there as well, even though his tape backs up his production. But you can't put too much stock into it. Teams have been snake-bitten time and time again from putting too much stock in it. You hear when the draft comes around, you hear the commenters say the quote-unquote workout warriors. And that's what some of these guys are. You could train to run a 40-yard dash quickly. You can train to jump high in a vertical jump. But you can't train to be a better football player. I mean, you can, but the tape speaks for itself. You have to go out there and look at the tape, look at the combine, look at all the numbers, and put it all together. And that's where really Joe Douglas and Howie Roseman have excelled, because I always talk about buying low and selling high. They buy low in the draft a lot. How many times has this team gone into these late rounds and found gems? Look at Jordan Mailata. I don't think any teams were buying his stock, but, you know, they said, we're going to take a chance on him, maybe find a diamond in the rough. And they've done that time and time again, and their track record has spoken for it. And it's just because they put – there was a good piece that came out today. I can't remember who wrote it, but it was Howie Roseman saying, you have to look at the tape, you have to look at the combine, you have to look at X, Y, and Z, cap numbers, yeah, analytics, yep, that's exactly what he said. He's like, because nothing is surefire, you just have to make very good bets. And that's what this team does, is they make formulated opinions, have good supporting evidence by all the factors, combine, testing, X, Y, Z, and they make a good bet, because that's what it is. You could go out and draft a Tom Brady in the first round, and he might be a crapshoot. You don't know. That's what it is. You're betting on these players. But the more information you have on these players, the more theories and all-around overall profile you have on a player, the better chance you are to hit on these bets. And that's why it is. You have to diversify your portfolio. Don't put all your stock into the combine basket.
Yeah, it's really just supposed to be a compliment to the film. Like, I'm not someone, though, that is totally against going after a raw prospect with crazy athleticism. And if they show that at the combine, that definitely raises your eyes. But then, hopefully, like, a Paris Campbell performance at the combine should then hopefully bring you back to the film, right? It's not something where you just see that performance from Campbell, and then you're like, okay, he's a first-round pick. Hopefully that will grab your attention, because now you know about his physical abilities. Then go back to the tape and evaluate it, because there's other guys, Gino, like an Elijah Holyfield that – a pretty eyebrow raising 40 time at like 4.7 and then a 4.88, I think the official time was. but you watch his Georgia tape, and the guy runs faster than that. And I'm just using Holyfield as one example, so it's kind of, you got to flip it around, too, as well as, you know, if there's guys that don't perform that well at the combine, still.
And that's when you buy low.
Tape.
You have to go
exactly.
back to the tape and buy low at that point, yep.
Yeah, so that's the thing, is just use it as a complement to everything else, specifically the tape. I mean, look, trust me, I'm a guy that is good for going after, you know, athletically gifted players that hopefully good coaching can mold them into potential stars. Like, I love high-ceiling players. But at a certain point, though, like, I know, too, you got to be responsible with it, and you got to see at least some traits on the field in tape that shows that they could be something. So let's take a break here on the Lockdown Eagles podcast. When me and Gino come back, we'll get into stock up, stock down. It's been a while. Let's see who's helping their case in the draft after the combine, free agency. Who hasn't been having a great offseason? That's coming up next right here on the Lockdown Eagles podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to Lockdown Eagles, this Thursday edition of the show, March 7th. We are just a couple, let's see, March 13th is the official date of free agency. It opens up at 4 o'clock, so we're 6 days away. So next Wednesday, free agency officially opens, and we can see what the Eagles are going to do. Until then, we hope you dive into the speculation with us. Recorded the offseason simulation podcast yesterday. Hope you check that one out on LockdownEagles.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. So, Gino, for stock up, I just want to start here with running backs, because you know I've been really I've really been going into the running back class in the draft, free agency. Mm-hmm. I think it's a position that the Eagles hopefully will add a nice weapon that can really do it all. And I think stock up right now is the Eagles' interest in running backs. They almost met with every legitimate prospect that you would know in the running back class in Indianapolis. They met with Josh Jacobs, Daryl Henderson, Miles Sanders, David Montgomery. You know, the list goes on and on. And now with the cap situation that they're in, with about $19 million in cap space before Brandon Graham's hit, so once you calculate that, it's probably around 13. But then let's just say they extend Nelson Aguilar and they cut Chris Long, right? Or just a couple more moves. They'll be around the $20 million cap range. And again, me and you have pretty much pounded the table all offseason that you need to stop worrying about the cap. Le'Veon Bell is possible if they want to go down that route. There's also other guys. Jordan Howard is now appearing to be shopped by Chicago. Duke Johnson is being shopped by Cleveland. And Jordan Howard makes a lot of sense. This is something that was actually just tweeted out an hour ago, Gino, that Adam Schefter reports multiple teams were engaging the interest of Chicago moving on from Howard at the combine. And Joe Douglas did draft him when he worked with the Bears. This is a typical buy-low kind of guy that you always mention for the Eagles, a young, inexpensive player that's produced two straight 1,000-yard seasons, then last year struggled with 3.7 yards per carry, but still almost broke the 1,000-yard mark. With him and guys like Duke Johnson, and even, you know, there's other buy-low targets like a Carlos Hyde, or even in free agency with a T.J. Yeldon, there are a lot of options for the Eagles and running backs, and I think the stock's up for them going after one of these guys because you can really tell they're doing their due diligence. Like, I believe they were one of those teams to inquire about Howard.
I don't know if you could have scripted this offseason any better for the players that are going to be available and the supply at those positions than this offseason for the Eagles is going to line up. Because we start with running backs, and you just mentioned a couple of the names. We haven't even mentioned guys in the draft like Divino Zigbo that we've been shouting from the rooftops for, myself, and then Andrew DiCecco, who was on the other day. He just ran a 4.53 and jumped a 37-inch vertical at their pro day, which is bananas because he outperformed a ton of the guys that went to the combine. Yeah. There are so many guys from Josh Jacobs down the list to Daryl Henderson to David Montgomery to Devin Singletary to guys down to Divine Ozigbo to maybe a Bruce Anderson who possibly could be a future guest on Locked On Eagles. I won't spoil anything. Hint, hint. But Kia, stay posted on that. But they, like you said, in free agency, too, there's so many guys. Mark Ingram is a name that we haven't even touched on. I wouldn't mind him in an Eagles uniform. You could trade a low-round pick for Duke Johnson, whose cap hit is $3 million next year. There are so many options from top to bottom at every position in need for this Eagles team that they are going to go out, and it's huge that they're showing interest in that position, because let it be known that these Eagles aren't going to play around, and they're going to go get a guy that is going to help Carson Wentz win. Maybe not just one running back, maybe multiple. I wouldn't see it out of the question that Adam Kaplan today, I was listening to the Go Birds podcast, which I think is great. It's the most informative podcast about the Eagles I listen to. I will continue to shout it from the rooftops to all of our listeners. He said that he thinks that the Eagles – well, he doesn't think. He knows because he talks to everybody in the Eagles organization – that they will probably make 2 to 3 new moves in free agency in the first day. He said one will definitely be a wide receiver, and he said two will be running backs depending on how the money goes. So if you look at the money that they're clearing, if you can maybe get a Tevin Coleman, a T.J. Yeldon in the door, and then go out and draft a second round or a fourth round running back, and man, you have a hell of a stable with Corey Clement, and you could bring back Darren Sproles. It's great to see that they're not waiting around for running backs to be taken anymore, that they're going to go out and make it a priority, because maybe you have to have a paradigm shift at some point and say, okay, drafting running backs late hasn't helped us, see Danelle Pumphrey as one example. Let's go get a guy that is going to contribute in multiple facets of the game, going to open up the offense for us, going to make us a two-dimensional team again, and going to bring Carson Wentz some stability back there.
So if you had to choose one of these buy-low trade targets, like let's say Tevin Coleman is really pricey in free agency because Le'Veon Bell gets a big deal, and then a team really wants to go after Tevin Coleman, a team with a lot of cap space, like a New York Jets, they want to pay Tevin Coleman more than the Eagles are willing to, and they'd rather go after an inexperienced guy, or an inexpensive guy, rather, with Jordan Howard or Duke Johnson. If you had to choose one between the two, who would you go with?
I'd say Duke Johnson. I think Jordan Howard had all the potential in the world to excel in that offense last season because they still don't completely trust Mitch Trubisky, and he still struggled, I'd say, to get it a consistent work base going. If you're going to get a guy for this offense, if you're going to build a receiving style running back who could still take a decent amount of touches, I think it would be Duke Johnson. I think he's perfect. It just unlucky for him, they were able to fall into Nick Chubb. They were able to fall in Kareem Hunt. Now he's fallen out of favor. And frankly, he could fall into favor for the Eagles because you look at his cap hits the next 3 years. It's $3 million, $4 million, $5 million for any running back. Look, if you go draft a Josh Jacobs, you're going to have to pay him first-round money, which frankly is way too high for my liking for any running back. But if you can get a Duke Johnson for the next 3 years for under $5 million on the cap each year, for what do you think he's going to fetch at most? A fourth-round pick?
Yeah, like fourth or fifth-round pick.
Fourth or fifth. We're going to be taking a chance on like a Darwin Thompson at that time, and it's like, is one bird in hand better than two in the bush, you know?
Yeah, and he's only 25 and he's produced, so this is a guy that's young and has produced on the NFL level.
Definitely, and he didn't have the right offense to succeed in the last couple of years, and he still put up decent numbers when he was able to get touches. So for an offense that runs a lot of outside zone, they run a lot of plays into the flat, they run a lot of screens into the flat, and they also can add a vertical element out of the backfield, Duke Johnson's your guy.
I agree. Some other guys that I thought stock up-wise, the running back position and the combine, Oklahoma State running back Justice Hill, another guy we're talking about that's a player that has some speed. He's got some receiving ability. He ran a 4.4 on top of a 40-inch vertical jump. Bench press 21. I think his broad jump was 10.10. So Justice Hill performed really well at the combine before he got hurt. And another guy that surprised me was a player that I really like, Miles Sanders out of Penn State. I thought he helped his stock. Daniel Jeremiah was really talking him up during the NFL Network's coverage. He ran a faster 40 time than I thought because I think this running back class has a lot of short area explosiveness in speed and burst, but the long speed, I feel like they're kind of lacking there. I feel like Justice Hill is one of the few guys that are an attractive option in that area. But Miles Sanders clocked in at a 4.51. I thought he as well looked fluid in the 40. I thought in the receiving drills, soft hands. He's someone that excites me. Not nearly the prospect that Penn State running back Saquon Barkley was, but at the same time, I think Sanders is another interesting mid option. Gino, what happened with Daryl Henderson's 40 time? Did somebody sneeze? Because it went from a 4.35, I think, to a 4.49 official time. Like, I was blown away by his 40, and then suddenly it was back in the 4.5 range. I don't know how they missed that.
Yeah, I felt bad for him. He had like a 4.3. We were both over the moon for this kid because he just ran a hell of a time, something that we didn't think he was going to do because we talked about it the last couple times. We said he almost had that Jay Ajayi speed, that 7-yard run against Dallas where he almost has enough straight line speed to get that last burst, but he doesn't have enough. And he officially ran a 4.49, which is really good. And I think that took a lot of the concern away from me in that straight line speed. But you look at another guy who we've talked about a lot, in Devin Singletary, a little shifty back, and he's running a 4.66. That's not great. I mean, it's middle of the road for a guy his size. He does get by on his feet, which is good, and that can help him out a lot. But if I'm going to take a back of his type, I'm going to look elsewhere just because of that 4.66 speed. You kind of had a fear that would happen, but the fear came true. I think there's other guys that went and had good performances, like Miles Sanders. You had Travion Williams out of A&M. We mentioned him before. Tony Pollard out of Memphis, he had a good all-star game. I think he was in the East-West Shrine game, if I'm not mistaken. Goes out and runs a 4.52. He's a good receiving back option. There are many guys that kind of put their name out there, like Raquel Armstead, too, out of Temple, a local kid, 4.45. I think there are a lot of options that we keep saying it. There are many options that this team can bring in with individualized skill sets late in the draft that can absolutely be an additional element to this running back core. And if you turn over three of the running backs from last season, I don't even think I'm going to complain about it.
Yeah, I'm not either. Do you agree with me here? Let's move on to another stock up here. The speed receivers really helped their draft stock. You'll get Paris Campbell, Mecole Hardman, Emmanuel Hall from Mizzou, Andy Isabella from UMass. There were a lot of fast receivers that I think are going to really help their stock. Like, I think on Locked On the Mock episode 2, me and you nabbed Paris Campbell in the 4th round. Like, you can say goodbye to that. And even for a guy like Hardman, your boy, who only clocked in, I think, 0.3 slower than Paris Campbell, which you
point
owe me a beer, by the way, for that.
I got
point
you.
Two. even Hardman, though, I feel like because Campbell's stock's going to go up, so is his, so is Emmanuel Hall. Like, the Eagles might have to, I don't know, if they want to get one of those guys. Even in Isabella, I'm really starting to like, too, out of UMass. 3rd round, they might have to get back into that round.
I told you, I think that those 70 picks between 57 and 127 is where a lot of the value lies in this draft as well, especially at that position. And I'm just going to read off the top 7 right here, times for 40s. Paris Campbell, 4.31. Andy Isabella, 4.31. Mecole Hardman, 4.33. DK Metcalf, 4.33, which is still beyond crazy to me. Terry McLaurin, 4.35. Emmanuel Hall, 4.39. Darius Slayton, 4.39. We've mentioned how many of those guys, 5 out of the 7 as potential targets for the Eagles. Of course, we would love DK Metcalf not going to fall to the Eagles, but you look at Emmanuel Hall, apparently had a sports hernia, and he still ran a 4.39. Bananas to think about. I can't even get off the couch when I stub my toe. He runs a 4.39 with a sports hernia. Terry McLaurin, we talk about time and time again, one of the underrated Ohio State receivers. He could potentially be there in the 4th round. Mecole Hardman, my guy. But these guys are just raising their stock, and that's what it can do for the speed receivers in the NFL. The NFL loves speed. You saw John Ross get drafted 9th overall a couple seasons ago. They love speed, and it's unfortunate. It would have been nice to see a Paris Campbell run like a 4.45, let him drop a little bit, but if they want a speed receiver in this draft, they're going to have to reach a little bit. I have a bad feeling this board is not going to fall in favor for that position.
Yeah, I agree, and that's why I expect them really to go prioritize that in free agency, which of course comes up first next week. Gina, before we take a break and get to stock down, any defensive players that caught your eye? I thought Charles Menehue looked really good.
Yeah, you took it right out of my mouth. I thought
he
looked good.
Yeah, I figured that was what you were going
to say. Yeah, that kid out of UCF, too, he was – I never heard of him until then, but he ran – he had a hell of a combine. Why can't I think of his name right now? Tristan Hill.
Yeah,
He only started one game last year, but he moved well. He had a good 3-cone time. He had a good 10-yard split time. I keep saying it, and I'm sure our listeners are getting annoyed with me, but there is so much depth at this defensive line position. Kalen Saunders ran a 4.01, and he's 330-some-odd pounds. Like, that is just crazy to me. Jerry Tillery, 4.93. Kingsley Kiki, 4.95. Zach Allen, 5.0. Kalen Ronnell Wren, like, these guys –
Kalen Saunders is working out like a receiver. Like it was, Kalen Saunders looked way more athletic than I thought.
It's just crazy. I thought Amenihue ran really, really well for his size. He tested with the edge group, so he ran a little slower, but he had a decent 10-yard split. In the agility drills where they lined him up as almost outside linebackers, his feet were moving really well. If he could put on a couple pounds, he could be a solid defensive tackle slash end edge mover like they do with Michael Bennett. He's only 6 pounds heavier than Bennett, so, I mean, if you need somebody to replace him, and there's been talks that they want to get him out of town, Amenihue's the guy. So we could talk about this all day, but yeah, in my opinion, I think mostly the entire group outside of Ja'Kai Polite raised their stock.
All right, let's take another break here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. Stock up, stock down, post-combine edition, pre-free agency edition. Don't go anywhere. All right, everybody, welcome back to the third and final segment of Locked On Eagles. Thursday, March 7th, we are in stock up, stock down mode, post-combine and pre-free agency edition. We are just under a week away from free agency, and the combine wrapped up in Indianapolis this weekend. So now we got to get into stock down, and I'm going to steer away from the combine here for a minute, Gino, because right before the podcast, and part of really motivating us to get back
on the air. It went official
the air,
during the podcast.
That's right. It went official. Oh, so it's official.
Yes, it is official, per Rappaport.
Yeah, Ian Rappaport of NFL Network reports that Washington is trading for Case Keenum. I just want to thank the NFC East because the Eagles have not been able, they have not had to deal with this terribly inept division forever. It's just, it's the Eagles and it's everybody else. I mean, the Redskins went from Kirk Cousins to Alex Smith to Case Keenum with a little Colt McCoy sprinkled on the side basically every single year. And just the mediocrity at this point from Dan Snyder is almost an art form, Gino.
I think if you would open a Webster's Dictionary right now, turn to the M's, look up mediocrity, the logo of the Washington Redskins would be sitting right there. Because I think they're, over like the last 11 seasons, they're like completely 500. They're an 8-18.
Is RG3 that move of moving up to get him, has that scarred them from caring about the quarterback position to where they want to invest significant resources? Because while they were right not to give Kirk Cousins the big money, it seems like they are just trying to go as mediocre as possible at the position.
Yeah, that's actually funny that you mentioned RG3 because I'm looking through Twitter right now and he said 12 minutes ago that's definitely what the fans wanted. So he's a little salty about Washington.
He's taking shots at Washington still. That's awesome.
You talk about all these teams that have quote-unquote mortgaged their future. Philadelphia is the only team that has successfully done it and came away with anything. I mean, look at the Browns.
Let's go to the Rams too, right? I mean,
yeah, the Rams.
I'm not a big golf guy. I wouldn't have did it, but I guess it's panned out.
Yeah, I mean, you look at this Washington team, and they've just been inept since then. I don't think they have ever done anything outside of being mediocre, and I cannot say it enough. I love being in the NFC East. I don't care why Dallas, a team in Texas, which is two time zones away, is in the NFC East. I could care less. They are not in favor with DeMarcus Lawrence right now. Two of their best pass rushers, and David Irving and Randy Gregory, are suspended for drugs. Their best cornerback is basically a safety. Their offense is going to have to pay $30 million to Dak Prescott. They're going to have to pay Ezekiel Elliott. They're going to have to pay Amari Cooper. Jason Witten just came back. God knows why. The New York Giants have no clue how to run an organization. The Eagles, if they don't win the NFC East for the next 10 years in a row, I will be stunned.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how terrifying is Eli Manning, Dak Prescott, and Case Keenum to you?
I'm more scared of these dust bunnies underneath my desk right now than I am about any of them.
It is the most, like, all three teams, too. It's not just one of them. Like, the Giants are going to let Landon Collins go, and they refuse to pay anybody outside of the carcass of Eli Manning. And Dallas, I cannot believe they're going to shell out $30 million a year to Dak Prescott. I'm sorry, that is absolutely asinine.
Hey, DeMarcus Lawrence, what are you doing? Like, I hate seeing him wreak havoc against the Eagles, but pay the man. He could get $175 million from the Jets if he hits free agency. Like, he's worth the money. You have to invest in the defensive and offensive lines. Look at the Philadelphia Eagles. Look what the Rams did on their way to the Super Bowl last year. Dallas just can't figure it out. They still think it's the 1980s when you could pay a running back, a receiver, and a quarterback all your money and try to succeed. That's not how the NFL works anymore. Pay DeMarcus Lawrence. Washington, get yourself a quarterback. New York, find somebody other than Eli Manning before you lose Odell Beckham on top of everybody else that you've already lost. I'm not going to try and play GM for these teams because they can't figure it out. But the Eagles fallen into the greatest circumstance of being in the NFC East. These Eastern divisions just have one team that knows how to operate a franchise in the Patriots and the Eagles, and the rest of them are just clueless.
Even taking Saquon Barkley, like, I'm a guy that's okay with investing in the running back position, but even the Giants taking Saquon Barkley second overall when there was all those quarterback prospects available and you had Eli Manning, like, still insane to me. Like, that's another move that kind of, it's been a year since that happened, and I know Saquon's an incredible talent, but that was a terrible use of a draft pick, too, considering who was in that class.
Best quarterback class in decades, and they drafted a running back.
Right, I mean, that's what it was talked about, was, like, five guys in the first round. While, like, we'll still see if that's actually how it pans out, because, like, to me, I wasn't a fan of the 2017 class, and here it is being this great class, but... Yeah, like, going into that draft, if you go back, it was like, oh, man, like, there's five guys that could potentially be, like, star quarterbacks in the league, and they went with a running back. Like, that's insane.
And Washington went with Alex Smith, and now they're going with Case Keenum, and the Giants are still with Eli Manning, and the Eagles have Carson Wentz. Like, to mention any of those guys in the same sentence as Carson just is really a disgrace at this point. I know Eagles fans don't want to hear it for all you full stands out there, but Carson Wentz is pretty damn good. Like, statistically speaking, he is very good. On
Carson
film,
Wentz
he is very damn good.
Carson Wentz on with a stress fracture in his back is 13 times better than, and what a random number to use, but so much better than any of those other quarterbacks. Gino, before we wrap up the show, any combine guys that did not really help their stock?
Oh, yeah, just a couple we'll run through real quick. We mentioned Elijah Holyfield. Really unfortunate for him.
And not just 40 time. Like, he didn't show the hands either, I thought. He had a couple bad drops, too.
Yeah, couldn't be like his dad and knock out the combine. But
that's right.
Yeah, right? But I think Holyfield's a big name. I think on the defensive line, somebody that I've mentioned a couple times, Draymond Jones, for being 280 pounds, he did not move well at all. And for a guy that had some issues in his leverage use, you would have liked to seen him test better, put on a little bit of weight, but I don't think he did himself any favors. So I'm trying to think on the defensive back portion. I think Nasir Adderley not running maybe hurt his stock a little bit because guys like Juan Thornhill and the rest of the safety batch tested unbelievable. Guys like Darnell Savage out of Maryland tested great. Thornhill, say time and time again how great he tested. The safety out of A&M, I can't think of his name off the top of my head, tested very well. But Adderley, if he falls to 25, you got to take him, in my opinion.
All right,
but,
well, that's your guy. That's your guy.
Yeah, I'll say it time and time again, but I'm so damn excited for next week. I wake up every single day just waiting for Eagles news. We've gotten Eagles news most of the days this week. We've gotten a couple restructures. We've gotten some extensions. Howie's sitting there with $19 million in cap at the moment. Next week is going to be really damn fun, Lou. I'm super pumped up, and then I'm super pumped up for the draft. This is the best time of year. I'm happier right now than I was around Christmas time.
All right, Gino, that's going to do it for today's edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. Stock up, stock down edition. Please, of course, subscribe to the podcast if you will. We really appreciate all the reviews we've been getting. Really humbled by some of the five-star reviews. Really appreciate all the listener feedback. You can always check us out at LockedOnEagles.com or subscribe to the podcast on any podcast platform we're available on. There's even Pod Paradise, Stitcher, anywhere you can find Locked On Eagles. Just tell your smart device to play the Locked On Eagles podcast, or you can find it on Twitter as well. I know all you guys out there are on Eagles Twitter, at Locked On Birds, at DBSCLOE, and at Gino_LOE. So, for my co-host Gino Camilleri, I'm Lou DiBiase signing off. This has been Locked On Eagles, as always. Thanks for downloading, thanks for listening, and let's go, Birds.
Fly, Eagles, fly.